Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, taking a look at science and science education to begin our program today with UW-Madison Professor of Chemistry Bassam Shakashiri. He joins us every so often to talk about the latest in science news and science education. Hope you'll join in. You may have questions or comments for him. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can always email us at talk@wpr.org. Post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Twitter as well at L Mueller Show. So you can go there as well. Bassam Shakashiri, welcome.
Thank you, Larry. I'm always happy to be with you. And I really look forward to being with you in the studio the next time around, perhaps before the 4th of July fireworks celebrations.
That's the perfect time to have you on to talk about what goes on with those fireworks. And I know you do a wonderful presentation in Madison, during the 4th of July celebration. But you were at a conference recently on taste and smell. What took you there?
Yes, this is an annual meeting of the Association for Chemoreception Sciences. That's the group that studies taste and smell. And neuroscientists are especially interested in, how we taste, how all the senses work, but especially that as they relate to taste and smell. It's part of my current research activity as we are developing experiments, collecting experiments, developing new demonstrations that relate the understanding of how the senses work. And so when we do a science experiment and energy is released either in the form of light or in the form of heat, or in the form of sound, we can then try to understand what happens inside the brain as the signals are received by the brain. So one special target area that we will be beginning to explore in some detail relatively soon deals with taste and smell. This is where the chemicals are topical, of course, just as they are in touch. But so that's what brought me to this conference. I learned quite a few things, actually.
Well, there's this business about tomatoes tasting sweeter than blueberries, and I know blueberries contain, I think, more sugar than tomatoes, but tomatoes taste sweeter.
It's very, very interesting that you bring this up, and that was one topic that was discussed at a special symposium that I attended. The chemistry of tomato flavors has three primary components: the sugars that are in there, the acids that are in there, and also what are known as volatile chemicals. The flavor compounds that waft into the air carrying the fruit aroma. There are more than about 400 volatiles in a tomato. And it's these volatiles, these are the volatile chemicals that are responsible for a large chunk of the perception of sweetness in fruit like tomatoes, blueberries, strawberries, and so on. And they contribute significantly, the odors, the smell, contribute significantly to the taste. You know the old experiment, if you put something in your mouth and then you pinch your nostrils and you can't taste very well, but then you open up and you can taste. Well, this is a variation on that. And it's been known since the 70s, actually, that the volatile compounds emanating from the fruit can be linked to the sweetness. But the effect of the individual volatiles are very small, and the amounts in each chemical in the fruit is also very small. So one of my colleagues at the University of Florida, a scientist by the name of Dr. Linda Bartoszek, gave this paper, and she's been studying relationships between taste and smell for a very, very, very long time. So it turns out that tomatoes have more volatiles in them than blueberries or strawberries, for that matter. But it also depends on the ripeness of the fruit. So it's not a simple explanation as to why the volatiles contribute more to the sweetness. It has to do with how ripe the fruit is and so on. So isn't it fascinating, Larry, to be a part of a scientific conference to learn about the different connections that happen in our brains as we enjoy food and enjoy the aroma of food and enjoy the sweet smell of whatever beverage we're enjoying. It's really, really fascinating.
It really is. Although some might say, well, why in the heck would we spend any money trying to learn about smell and taste?
Well, there's several reasons. The first one, and I think the one that drives us all, is the natural curiosity that we have.
Absolutely.
We're all full of questions. We ask questions. Why does this fruit taste different than this other fruit? Why do tomatoes that you buy in the stores now, why don't they have a flavor to them? So we do research to try to answer questions like this. There are hundreds of such questions. The other reason is that by applying the results of such research, we can improve the quality of life. We can improve the quality of our existence. We can benefit from these advances, and we can move toward being responsible not only for ourselves but for each other in terms of how we interact with the sources of the food or the sources of the materials that have these aromas. Spring is upon us, Larry, and we begin to see the flowers blooming and the buds on the trees bursting, and we are exposed to pollen. I suffer from allergies. I don't know about you, but I suffer from allergies. And so investigating the beautiful, complex, natural world that we live in and how we are affected by it is why we do research. And the practical applications then relate to developing commercial products that will be marketed and can be sold successfully, being aware of the importance of having safe products, being aware of the importance of putting chemicals in the food that might be harmful to us. All of these factors are related to what we do in science and how science interacts with society.
Absolutely. You recently had correspondence from a former student telling you about a local effort to improve science education in a rural high school.
I'm very fortunate, Larry, because I hear from several, I dare say many, former students from all over the state, from around the country, indeed around the world. And just last week, one of my former students who took Chemistry 103, Chemistry 104 with me some years ago, he's a dentist now. He lives in Richland Center. He wrote me to tell me about an activity that he and others in the Richland Center community decided to undertake, and that is to improve the quality of science education at the Richland High School. What they did is they raised, during the past 5-6 years, about $60,000 for equipment and computers to be used in the Richland Center High School. And this enabled them to increase the number of advanced placement courses at the high school. 6 years ago, there was one AP course. Now, as a result of this local community activity, there are 9 such courses. So I am very grateful. I'm very grateful to hear from former students. I'm very happy to hear about the different initiatives that people take locally in Wisconsin and elsewhere to improve the quality of education. My former student, the dentist, is it okay to mention his name on the air?
Yeah, sure.
So that's Dr. Terry Moen. He has been corresponding with me for some time. He had asked me to make a short video presentation encouraging people in Richland Center to contribute to this cause. But what's really impressive about all this, Larry, is not only the financial initiative that they took, but it's what's beneath that, the sense of responsibility, individual and collective responsibility that people have to improve the quality of science education, to improve the quality of life in the community. That is really what is very important and touching to me. And that is at the very heart of what you and I and others talk about all the time, the Wisconsin idea. The Wisconsin idea that promotes excellence in all corners of the state, and indeed around the world. So I'm very grateful for Terry for the initiative that he has undertaken, and I hope others in the listening area will think about the needs that they perceive their schools need, whether it's a high school, middle school, elementary school, even a two-year institution or a four-year institution, and try to work with the education faculty to see how they can contribute to improve the quality of education, not only in science, but in all areas.
We have. Thank you so much for those comments, Bassam. Bassam Shakashiri, our guest today. You can join in, too, with your own questions, comments, or maybe you have experiences to share. Love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Again, email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And let's turn to Linda in Madison next. Linda, hi. Thank you for calling.
I grew up in Richland Center, and while it's fantastic that the community is working to upgrade the high school, I wanted to do the shout-out for the UW-Richland campus that is within walking distance of the high school and allows students to start their college careers while they're in high school. And it's been in the community since 1968 as a satellite of UW-Platteville.
Thank you, Linda. My call is for supporting all quality educational efforts at all levels, beginning with pre-K and going all the way to 16th grade, going to college. Yes, and I've been to the Richland Center High School. I've been to the Richland Center a branch of UW system. I totally agree with you. Yes, we all should be focusing our attention on our immediate environment to try to improve it as much as possible.
Thanks again for that call. Let's turn to Jim in Winchester next. Jim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Great. Appreciate the call.
Yes, I have a question for him. I have a daughter who is in high school, and it's off topic of the of what you're going with, but I've been looking for summer camps geared toward like Mars expeditions or science-type programs because my daughter's interested in that. I was wondering if he might have some ideas of where to go.
See, now I'm trying to locate in my brain where Winchester is.
Oh, that's near Presque Isle, near Magic Waters.
Okay.
North of Minocqua.
Northern Minocqua, okay.
Or north of Minocqua, Wisconsin, yes.
There are several good and rich offerings in the summer all over the state. So what I would suggest is that you visit the UW system website and then do a search on summer camps for youngsters and see what you can find there. I know in the Madison area and near Milwaukee and so on, we have several of these programs every summer. Although I should mention that one very important and highly successful program called College for Kids was recently discontinued at UW-Madison. That's another conversation. I think there are offerings, and I ask you to do a search of the type that I suggested, Jim.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Bassam Shakashiri, our guest today, professor of chemistry at UW-Madison, talking with him about science and science education. Join in 800-642-1234 with your questions or comments. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 11:45, we'll be talking about severe weather with our weather guys, so I hope you can stick around and stay with us for that. Right now, taking a look at science and science education with our guest, Bassam Shakashiri, professor of chemistry at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Great to have him along, and really appreciate your efforts as we talk. Well, you know, I think it's great that we have things happening like are happening at Richland Center. Still, it seems that our efforts to improve science and science education have a little ways to go, at least when we compare how we do in some of the STEM courses, or at least in the testing. Math is an example where we're still lagging behind other countries.
Well, I agree that we always have to be aware of what else is going on in other countries in the area of science and math education at all levels, not just at the elementary, secondary level, but at the collegiate level, at the graduate level. And so it's important to be aware of these comparisons, these international comparisons, because they are telltales of how we rank compared to other countries. But these rankings by themselves are not sufficient. It's not enough to be number one in one area. What we have to look at is the components and the criteria and the quality of education that we have in our systems. So these international comparison studies call attention to serious problems that we have. You know, Larry, I can't help but say I'm reminded of the law of the Yukon. Remember do you know the law of the Yukon? The scenery changes only for the lead dog.
Oh, that's a good one. I have never heard that before.
Yeah, well, I've used this before in one of the slides that I use in some of my talks. I use this to call attention to the importance of being careful when we look at these international comparison studies. What's really important is that all our offerings be above a certain minimal threshold level in terms of the quality of the teaching that we have, the quality of the environment where the teaching takes place, and not only be focused on the results of testing scores. Tests are one telltale. The ultimate measure of the effectiveness of our schools, of our societal institutions, is how we behave in society, how we behave in daily life, how we live, and how we respect the environment, and how we deal with serious challenges that are confronting us. So, Larry, last Friday was Earth Day. Earth Day, yep, was started by former governor and former U.S. senator from Wisconsin, Gaylord Nelson. And I just wonder, among our listening audience, are there people who care to call and share with us what Earth Day means to them, what they did on Earth Day, what is the connection between our modern standard of living in an industrialized nation and the effect of pollutants on our environment, whatever it is that people in the listening audience care to share with us. I'm just curious about how Earth Day is received, how it is inspiring us to be responsible for the quality of water that we have in Wisconsin and the neighboring states, for the air quality, for the natural resources that we have. Are we putting too much phosphorus into our lakes and water systems? I'm just curious if people in the listening audience would care to call about that. As to me, you know, that is a measure of the effectiveness of what we do in our schools and what we do in the communities where the schools are.
We have Pete in La Crosse. I'm just joined us, I don't think, to respond to what you just said, but has something else. Or Bill in La Crosse, I guess.
No, this is Pete in La Crosse.
Oh, okay, Pete.
Hi, Larry and Sam. In science, most of us are evidence-based, and I suspect most of your students are as well. In our country, though, we have many people who are faith-based or get their guidance elsewhere. I'm just wondering if you have ever dealt with a student who was not evidence-based and somehow managed to teach them. How did you accomplish this?
That's a very good question, Pete. It is at the heart of how we can work together with all members of society, with all people in the classroom and outside the classroom, to bring about an understanding, at least an appreciation, of the role of science in society. So the interplay between faith and evidence is a very important one. Manifestations of that, of course, relate to the study of evolution and to climate change. I think it's very, very important to engage in respectful conversations about these matters. There's a very well-known woman in the Southwest who she is not a climate scientist. Her name is Catherine Hayhoe. She's an evangelist, but she understands and appreciates the importance of respectful dialogue with people about climate change. She's not a denier of climate change, as some people are. So I think the critical approach here is to be respectful of each other as human beings. I'm not saying respecting the ideas that people have. Indeed, engage in conversations about the ideas. I think faith is important. So is evidence, and the interplay between those two has to be done in effective ways among all segments of society. I don't know if this helps with your question, Pete. Does it?
I'm just wondering if you were able to teach a student who wasn't evidence based.
Teach them what?
Teach them your course material, or did they not accept that and just say that, well, if the reaction was meant to happen, it was?
I think what we try to do is to approach teaching. I'd like to emphasize to approach learning, which is a lot more important than teaching, but teaching is a way to help learn. To approach it in such a way is to consider what it is that we are looking at. Consider it with an open mind and to look at ways by which we can disentangle whatever it is that we're looking at. For example, in the fall when the leaves start changing color, we're all taken by the beauty of that, and we ask questions about it. We ask questions about the different colors, and what is it that's causing these colors to change? So there are ways by which we can use science, in this case, use chemistry. When somebody asks the question, why do the leaves change color in the fall, they're not asking for the names of all the sugars and all the chemicals that are in there. They're asking a question that clearly shows curiosity. And so if we can nurture that curiosity, by showing that experiments have been done, by showing that evidence has been obtained, by analyzing the evidence, by deconstructing the evidence, by making sense of the evidence, if we do that successfully, not only in a science course, but in all aspects of our human interactions, I think we have a good chance to not only enjoy being with each other, but to learn from each other.
Pete, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. give us a call or shoot us an email at talk@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. You mentioned Earth Day being last Friday, and it just sort of brought to mind the Paris Climate Change Accord that was signed. What about the, what is the accord? Basically, what does it say, and how is it going to affect us?
It's amazing to me that about 170 countries gathered in New York, representatives from the countries gathered in New York to sign the climate accord that was reached in December in Paris. So this is a governmental action, and whether the countries that signed will make good on their pledges, it remains to be seen. It all has to do with slowing down the dangerous greenhouse gas emissions and the action that countries will take. China, for example, has committed recently to strictly controlling public investment flowing into projects with high pollution and carbon emission, both domestically and internationally. Well, that's a commitment. Are there ways by which they are going to be implementing that? Well, it remains to be seen. The United States has pledged that we will cut out greenhouse gas pollution between 26-28% from the 2005 level by the year 2025. Now, is that going to happen after the recent Supreme Court unexpected action on implementing major environmental regulations? How will the presidential election that's coming up affect what we do? The European Union has committed to cut emissions by at least 40% by the year 2030. Which is very ambitious. India perhaps has made the most significant pledge to increase the use of solar power generation to 100 gigawatts by the year 2022, up from 3 gigawatts generated in India last year. So that's what this accord is all about. But that does not mean that we individually should not be active as well. We should think about using more efficient lights, more efficient appliances. We should use more public transportation. We should aim to drive low-emission vehicles. Should consume less, reuse more, recycle as much as possible. We should support efforts to mitigate the undesired consequences of climate change. One of them is this accord that was signed. And, individual action may have a small effect, but inaction has zero effect. So it's a matter of taking action both individually, collectively, and nationally. I have some concerns, Larry, about the direction that the U.S. will be moving in if we do not go beyond the Paris Accord that was signed last Friday in New York. It's in my opinion, it's not enough to do what is in that accord. That relates to carbon emission, carbon dioxide emission. But there are other issues that relate to fracking and to the escape of natural gas, methane, which is also a very potent greenhouse gas, and it is more damaging than carbon dioxide gas. We've had a huge leak in California 6 weeks ago, a huge leak, and the contributions from such occurrences, we just have to be more responsible, more careful individually and collectively.
We have, you were talking about individuals and what individuals can do. I know Marcia posted on Facebook that she spent Earth Day planting some berry bushes. She eliminated sod for a garden from her, she's continuing to reduce her lawn grass and expand her organic gardening in her yard. And she donated 10 blue spruce starts to the Deforest Parks and Recreation, which she had received by joining the Arbor Day Foundation. So that was a great win-win.
Thank you. Thank you, Marcia. And thank you others who have done similar things. Please share with us, but also, more importantly, with your neighbors what you have done, because this is how we influence and help each other to take responsibility for the beautiful environment that we enjoy and to help maintain it.
Bill from Green Bay called in to just couldn't hang on, but wanted to highly recommend the space camp in Huntsville, Alabama. Apparently has some experience with that space camp and wanted to recommend it to our earlier caller who wondered about space camps. And
Very good.
And then Tracy emailed to ask if you're familiar with any group that specializes in trying to increase adult science literacy.
That's what UW Extension is, among other things, right?
Yeah.
There are responsible groups, not only at universities, but in communities that sometimes monthly, sometimes weekly sessions dealing with science literacy. You know, last year I offered a course on science, chemistry, and society. We had over 100 people who, from the community, it was open to the community. Over 100 people signed up for it. There were about four or five students from UW-Madison, and it, unfortunately, we're not able to offer it now. But the videotapes of all the sessions are available on the Wisconsin channel. And so if you just look for, if you're interested in the topics that were discussed there, please look at the Wisconsin channel guide for the playback times. In fact, I'll put them on my web on my website, Larry. Invite people. That's the easiest way to do it. www.scifun.org. SCIFUN.org.
And you know, I'm frankly, your website, in terms of increasing a science literacy, does a wonderful job.
Thank you, thank you. We have experiments you can download to do at home. We have recommended readings. We have recommended websites. We have information about certain chemicals under an entry called Chemical of the Week. We have all kinds of other interesting, I hope interesting, entries that people can benefit from.
CJ in Door County has a question. Hi, CJ.
Hey, I was calling to find out, there's a huge flex fuel with ethanol push nowadays, and I was wondering if the ethanol fuel, it's saving on the oil, but is it saving on the environment at all, or is it just saving on the oil?
Yeah.
Okay, Larry, would you repeat that? I didn't quite get what the ethanol, something about
ethanol. He was wondering if the new flex fuel systems, he was wondering if that sort of emphasis on flex fuels, it may be saving on oil, but is it saving in other areas? Is it costing us more in other areas?
I honestly don't know. I'll have to look into that. I'm making a little note to look into that, and if I learn something more about it, I will post it on the website, as we always put a link to your show, Larry, after my appearances with you.
All right. So, CJ, go to scifund.org. Probably, well, it's going to take you a few days probably because you're not at home to work on that, Bassam.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Bassam always follows through, so keep checking. Jeanette in Platteville. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, good morning. I want to give a plug for the County Conservation Board from my home state of Iowa. The County Conservation Boards are like small park services in each county. They own land, and all 99 counties have them. Most of them have one, if not two, naturalists, and they give programs from small children, families, all the way up through adults. They do a lot of in-school programs as well as taking kids on hikes. That's a great program, but there's also different organizations that give outdoor education, like the Iowa Prairie Network, the Prairie Enthusiast, and other places like that. Since living in Illinois, I've just encountered some firemen that get a little spooked when we do prescribed burns on our prairies, and we have to explain to them environmentally that this place is built on prairies, and that's where we get our great soil from. So the lack of adult education is rather appalling, and I'm wanting to plug Wisconsin and our adjoining states to do more of that.
Thank you for sharing. Let us be sufficiently appalled so we act positively. It's important that we act on our convictions, not only in the areas that we've been talking about here, but in all areas that are of concern to individuals and groups in a community. Thank you for sharing about the County Conservation Board. I really appreciate hearing about that.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot, Jeanette. Yeah, I really appreciate it, Jeanette. Well, here we are about running out of time here, Bassam, in our last minute or so. Have you a final word of wisdom or two?
I would say, I want to say how grateful I am for being a faculty member at UW-Madison and being part of a community throughout, I believe, Wisconsin is one community. That values education, values quality endeavors, and I'm very happy and very grateful for the opportunities that I continue to have. Larry, you know, this is my 46th year as a faculty member there, and despite some misguided action that happens every now and then, with regard to funding for UW-Madison, with regard to tenure decisions, with regard to the Wisconsin idea, I and others are committed to the true meaning of the Wisconsin idea and to the great manifestations that it has for benefiting not only the citizens of Wisconsin, but the citizens of the world. So thank you, Larry, for this opportunity once again. And for this discussion. And thank you, callers and listeners, for what not only you have said, but for what you're going to do.
Bassam, thanks. Thank you so much. I appreciate it very much. Bassam Shakashiri, professor of chemistry at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, joined us by phone today. He's out on the East Coast for some meetings, so it was great to have him with us by phone. And he comes back pretty often, and it's always a great pleasure to have him with us. So we'll look forward to his next visit. And looking forward to what's coming up. We'll be taking a look at climate and weather. This is kind of the severe weather season that we're getting into. And so our weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin, will address that and a whole lot more next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.